By far the most riveting moment at this year's TED conference in Long Beach, California, was when a gentle, intelligent, and passionate lawyer by the name of Brian Stevenson addressed the court of some very influential public opinions, the TED conference audience.
In many parts of this country, and certainly in many parts of this globe, that the opposite of poverty is not wealth. I don't believe that. I actually think in too many places, the opposite of poverty is justice.
Certainly sounds intelligent, but in that excerpt, Stevenson was just getting started. Here he finishes up with a story of how an older black man janitor named Jimmy, in a courtroom in Alabama, who marched right up to the front of the courtroom to hear one of Stevenson's passionate arguments about equality and justice, and a uniformed deputy tried to stop that janitor. He couldn't.
He said, "Jimmy, what are you doing in this courtroom?" And this older black man stood up, and he looked at that deputy, and he looked at me, and he said, "I came into this courtroom to tell this young man, keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. I've come to TED because I believe that many of you understand that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice, that we cannot be full evolved human beings until we care about human rights and basic dignity, that all of our survival is tied to the survival of everyone, that our visions of technology and design and entertainment and creativity have to be married with the visions of humanity, compassion, and justice. And more than anything, for those of you who share that, I've simply come to tell you that to keep your eyes on the prize, hold on. Thank you very much."
As you can hear, by the end of that talk, the entire audience was on its feet cheering and vowing to hand over $1 million to Stevenson's nonprofit Equal Justice Initiative. In the weeks since the TED conference, I've had a lot of time to think about Brian Stevenson and justice. He's been busy arguing a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm thrilled to welcome to the program now Brian Stevenson. He's executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative. Welcome to the program, Brian.
I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
It's great to talk to you again. Tell me right at the start here, what is the scale of the unequal justice that you see in the cases where you represent young clients, and what do you think it's doing to the social fabric all throughout the United States?
Well, I think the scale is quite massive. In 1972, there were 300,000 people in jails and prisons in the United States. Today, there are 2.3 million. And this increase in the number of people being sent to jail and prison, I think, has had a radical impact on American society. We now have the largest prison population in the world, the highest rate of incarceration in the world. And I think it's been devastating to not just the way we think about criminal justice, but to a range of social and cultural and political institutions. And so I think it's a very serious issue that has dramatic implications. In the cases that I work on, it plays out in even more dramatic ways. I represent people on death row who are literally dying for legal assistance because we don't provide lawyers to people whose convictions have been affirmed on direct appeal. And that means that many people are facing execution simply because they can't get the legal help they need. The cases I've been working on recently do involve children who've been sentenced to die in prison, some as young as 13 and 14. The U.S. is the only country in the world that condemns children that age to life imprisonment without parole. So I think this all has huge implications for the kind of society, the kind of country, you know, the kind of world we're creating through neglect and, in my judgment, through unjust treatment of many of these people.
Let's take one statistic. In Alabama, 30% of young black men are unable to vote because of their encounters with the criminal justice system.
That's right. There are a lot of collateral consequences from mass incarceration. Felon disenfranchisement, voting disenfranchisement, is one of the more dramatic examples of that. There are several states that permanently take away your right to vote if you have a criminal conviction. And what that means is that in many jurisdictions, because of unequal enforcement of these laws, it's had a heavy impact on communities of color. And Alabama is one of the examples. We're actually at about 35% today of the black male population permanently losing the right to vote. And we're actually projecting in the next 10 to 15 years, the level of disenfranchisement in some communities will actually be higher than it was at the point at which the Voting Rights Act was passed in the 1960s, which I think is a really disgraceful situation that needs a lot more attention.
And knowing your mind, I suspect you are imagining the kinds of challenges and arguments before the Supreme Court that will attempt to reverse such a frustrating and difficult set of social demographics on that scale. But let's talk about your argument before the Supreme Court within the last couple of weeks. How did they greet your unequal justice argument on the question of young people incarcerated for life?
Well, you know, I actually thought the court was listening carefully. I do hope that they understood everything we were trying to say. It wasn't the first time we'd been there. We actually started this effort about 5 years ago, arguing that the court's recent ban on executing juveniles ought to be extended to other kinds of death in prison sentences. And the court did agree with us a couple of years ago and banned life without parole sentences for children convicted of non-homicide offenses. We've asked them to extend that because we are the only country in the world that imposes these kinds of sentences, and because we know that children will change. I mean, no matter what you think about certain offenders who you may believe should be permanently incarcerated, we think it's cruel to say that about a child, because we know that children will change biologically, emotionally, psychologically. And, you know, the court was actually quite responsive and asked a lot of questions about the kinds of remedies that might be imposed. So I was encouraged by that. But you never know with the court, and we'll be getting a ruling sometime here in the next 6 to 7 weeks, probably.
Talking with Brian Stevenson, executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. Brian, you said twice now this morning, we are the only country in the world, blank. You made a comparison at TED, which described the sense of global outrage that would have come from the court system in Germany, for instance, targeting individuals based on their history versus what the United States appears to be doing in defiance of its own history. Could you make that comparison again? And I'm wondering if you made it before the court.
I have not made that specific argument before the court, but I absolutely do believe we need to be humbled by our history. I think we need to be more attentive to our history. And in the region where I work, where the legacy of racial bias, of lynching, of Jim Crow, of segregation, of slavery is still so present. We have huge disparities based on race. Things are still quite segregated in many places. The state constitution of Alabama still prohibits black and white kids from going to school together, and we can't get that out of the state constitution because the majority of the people in the state have repeatedly voted to keep it in as recently as 2004. I do think we need to be much more attentive to our history. And when I was in Germany giving lectures about race and the death penalty, German scholars were quick to note that they believe that it would be unconscionable for Germany to ever engage in capital punishment with its horrific history of systematically killing people in the ways that they have. They just said, we have forfeited that opportunity, that right. We can't do it again. It would be unconscionable to live in a world where people were still being asphyxiated in gas chambers in the nation state of Germany. And I do think that's significant. When I come back to Alabama and I walk around in communities where buried in the ground are the bodies of people who were lynched, where people of color are still walking around with many wounds and scars and injuries from Jim Crow and the humiliation of racial subordination and segregation, and I look at a death penalty system that is affecting people of color disproportionately, where 80% of the people executed have been executed for crimes involving victims who are white, I do think that we should think more carefully about our histories, our obligations to ourselves. And that's throughout our system.
Well, Brian, final question then. How do we take that step as a nation to get to where those Germans are, where they look back and go, we can never allow ourselves to go down this road?
I think we have to commit ourselves to a process of truth and reconciliation. I think we need to be more truthful about our mistakes, about our failings, about our history. You know, our immigration policy would do well to reflect on what we did during World War II to Japanese Americans through internment in concentration camps. If we recognize that we have the capacity to be extreme, to be unfair, to be unjust, to violate basic human rights and dignity, I think we approach it with a lot more humility. If we're more conscious of how the politics of fear and anger can push us someplace where we're violating basic human rights and human dignity, I think we'll be more resistant. I think we'll be more conscientious. I think we'll be more committed to the, you know, the requirements of equality and fairness. But when we're indifferent to all of those things, and we're so cocky and confident about how we can never do wrong, we can never make mistakes, I think we create the kinds of problems that I've been describing in my work.
Brian Stevenson, I'm glad not to be on the other side of the courtroom from you this morning. Brian Stevenson, Executive Director of the Equal Justice Initiative, online from Montgomery, Alabama. Brian, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.